Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silica Cast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, September 30th, 2007, and this is show number 114. Well, hey guys, I am all jazzed up because I just got back from the podcast expo this afternoon. Okay, so technically it's called the Portable and New Media Expo, PNME, but you know, most people just call it the Podcast Expo. That's easier. It was held out in beautiful downtown Ontario, California at the Ontario Convention Center, and I think there were a couple thousand attendees. Let me see if I can give you some highlights to give you the flavor of the event. So each day there's a keynote speech, which in the past has been pretty famous people like Leo Laporte, but this time they weren't quite as famous, except the last day when it was actually the Ask a Ninja guys, which was, that was pretty funny. They were actually hilarious. I don't even like Ask a Ninja, but I thought they were really, really funny. So anyway, then the classes start. They've got about six different tracks going at the same time. I really like the idea of having tracks because there's like podcasting 101 kind of classes, and then there's really advanced presentations on video encoding techniques, and then a bunch of normal human kind of stuff in the middle. In the unlikely circumstance that you don't find something compelling during given hour, there's always the exhibit show floor. When I got bored at one point, I wandered into the exhibit hall, and I ran into Eddie Vogt, a listener of the No Silica Cast. How cool is that? It was really fun. He was so gracious and complimentary. I almost blushed. Okay, almost. Anyway, I put a picture of Eddie and I goofing off on the in the show notes. I think you'll like it. There's a ton of pictures in the show notes, so I'll be referring to them as I go through the notes here. So the exhibit floor was always interesting. I really like just talking to people, guests and presenters alike. But everybody there is all trying to learn what they don't know and teach what they do know, which is really cool. I was really honored to be asked by Bill Palmer of iProng.com to be on a panel during lunch at the Orange County Podcasters booth. The subject was, should you hack your iPhone? It was great. Bill took the stance he referred to as Nervous Nelly, recommending no hacks at all on the iPhone. My job was kind of to be in the middle. I've hacked it as far as to put third-party applications on it, but I'm not nearly bold enough to actually unlock the iPhone or even, you know, do something like put ringtones on it. The third position was taken by none other than Shuby, the teenage assistant to Leo Laporte, who Leo frequently refers to as America's favorite junior. Shuby was wonderful. He was intelligent like I'd hoped and fun like I figured, but he came with a tragic story. Before the panel, where he was going to extol the virtues of unlocking your iPhone, he ran the iPhone update, and he ended up with a bricked iPhone. Shuby was pretty irritated, as was Bill, that Apple would take such a hard stance as this, actively bricking people's iPhones. From what Shuby showed us on the iPhone, they actually put an error code on the splash screen that tells all Apple employees that this was an unlocked phone, so don't do anything to help them. I kind of took a different stance. I'm not really going to be that hard on Apple, because if you think about it, this is a business. I know a lot of people, myself included, treat it like a religion sometimes, but it's a business, and they have contracts, say, with AT&T. And I'm willing to bet good money that there's language in that contract that says that they have to do something to disable the phone if someone were to hack it and unlock it to put it on another network. I wouldn't be a bit too surprised about that. Now, perhaps it's heavy-handed to actually destroy the device as it has been, but I bet that's a really effective way to stop people from doing it. It was an interesting debate, and my buddy Ron taped the whole thing for me. My husband Steve is going to pare it down from the excessively long 44 minutes it took to a much shorter video that maybe you guys might want to watch. When he's done, I'll get that posted on podfeet.com. Anyway, it was a lot of fun hanging out with Bill and Shuby and debating the different points of view, and I really, really enjoyed myself. So thanks a lot, Bill. The Podcast Expo is heaven for the Apple fanboys like me. Wait, am I a fanboy or fangirl? It doesn't sound right. Fanboy. We'll go with that. You have never seen such high percentages of Macs in your life. I would estimate that around 70% of the laptops there were Macintoshes. It was a beautiful sight. That was wonderful, but what really blew me away was how many people had iPhones. To date, before I went to the expo, I'd say I've seen maybe 2 entire iPhones out in the wild, like just going to Starbucks and there's a guy with an iPhone. But I'm not joking. At least half of the people had iPhones. I really wish I'd noticed it earlier. I would have, in one of the big crowded arenas, said, hey, everybody raise your iPhone up if you've got it and get a picture of how many there were. It was crazy. I guess podcasters are early adopters or something. At the end of the show, I was walking out and I unknowingly dropped my iPhone out of my bag on the floor. Somebody found it, held it up and said, hey, who dropped their iPhone? In any other circumstances, the question would have either been, what's this? Or the person would have just stolen it because it was the first one they'd ever seen. But at the expo, heck, the guy probably had one of his own. I was sure glad it was there where I dropped it. I gotta be more careful. Anyway, I took a picture of the dinner table one night. There were 4 of us sitting at dinner, and there were 4 iPhones on the table. It's kind of a fun picture to see that many together. Probably one of the most enjoyable things was one of my most enjoyable things last year. I got a chance to hang out with Sean Carruthers and Andy Walker from Lab Rats. I love these guys. They have their own show, but Sean is also a regular on Leo Laporte's Canadian show, Lab with Leo, and Andy Walker is a frequent guest star on the show. So these guys are like famous people, but they're just cool guys. They're just fun. They're really excessively silly in an odd kind of way. Well, you might remember that I was very excited about this last year because they actually interviewed me for their show. And you'll notice I never showed you the link to the show where I was on. Turns out the sound was bad. Now, I figured they were just like trying to get rid of me or something. But when they saw me this time, they said, hey, Allison, we got to do an interview again because I felt so bad when that was wrecked last year. That was really cool. It was really fun to talk to him. And Andy was a lot of fun. Andy's pretty much like the main on-air personality guy. And Sean has the microphone and the camcorder and everything. But then Sean always finds some reason that he needs to walk up and be in front of the camera. So hopefully this one actually airs and I can show you what he did to me. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. And I kept running into him throughout the show. And they're like, hey, Allison, you know, just regular guys. And that was really fun for me. Let's see, Craig Severson from gruntmedia.com did a pitch, and I've always really liked Craig's stuff. I actually teach a course where I explain how to do a podcast, and I like to use his intro video from gruntmedia.com to explain what a podcast actually is. I got to hear him earlier this year when I was at the, the Gear Media Tech Conference, and he's really, really good. I like talking to him. He was assisted by Kenji Kato, who was at Gear Media Tech also, and I hadn't had much of a chance to talk to Kenji, but I asked Craig a question. He told me to ask Kenji about it. I was having trouble. I'm trying to start doing screencasts, and I think there's a lot of momentum around this concept. That's basically where you teach something on screen and you show people what you're doing. So instead of me just talking about it, I could have a screencast going where those who wanted to watch could see what I was doing. So anyway, I made this one screencast, and the file's just huge. So then you got to figure out how you're going to encode it so it gets smaller. Well, you remember, I'm quite the expert in video encoding now and all that. But it was weird. Anything I did made the file get bigger. So I enlisted the help of Don McAllister from Screencast Online. I'll talk a little bit more about him later. But anyway, I enlisted his help, and he said, well, just make this small file and show me what you're talking about. So I recorded the screen at 1024 by 768 pixels, right? And I had it high quality, and it was, uncompressed audio and all this stuff, and, you know, real high quality video. Then I started doing things to shrink it. Like I said, let me make it 640 by 480. The file got bigger, not smaller. What the heck? So I had it at 24 frames per second. So I said, all right, let me cut it down to 12 frames per second. That ought to be way smaller, right? No, it was bigger. Well, what's going on? So then I took the high-quality version, I re-encoded it at medium, and the file got bigger. I've been asking all kinds of people about this for weeks, trying to get some help, can't figure out what's going on. So I talked to Kenji. Kenji says, well, what's your keyframe set to? It's like, oh man, there's so much to know. What the heck is a keyframe? Well, I didn't want to admit to him I didn't know what it was. I asked people later. But apparently it's it's like a distance between frames, like it was normally set to 24 frames between keyframes. It sort of interpolates between the two keyframes and figures out what should be happening between those two. I don't quite understand that. I'm doing a botch up explanation, but he said you can actually make the keyframes on a screencast really far apart. As long as you're not doing any kind of video or anything, nobody will see anything jumping on the screen. So it was set to 24, and he said, you know, I've done it as big as like 2,000. And I'm like, 2,000 sounds scary. But let me try going from 24 down to 100. And guess what? It reduced my file size by 40%. Woohoo! So now, once I had done that, I could make further adjustments in all those other metrics, and it would actually get smaller. So I'm just so happy Kenji helped me out with that. He also recommended a book called The Revolutionary QuickTime Pro 5 and 6. And I put a link in the show notes to Amazon where you can pick that up if you're interested in learning more about QuickTime Pro. I might do that because I'm getting into it, having some fun. Well, after Craig Severson's pitch, he was kind of talking about compression and this kind of stuff. And a guy named John Foster, who's of MacBreak Tech, and he works with Leo Laporte and those guys, he did the greatest demonstration of what the difference is between good compression and bad compression. He took a piece of paper and he scribbled on it. And he said, all right, here's my original. It's great, but you know what? It's big. I can't email it. So he takes a second one and he scribbles on it. And he says, I'm going to compress it. And he takes it and he crumples up and wads it up into a little tight ball and he throws it across to a room to a shill in the audience that he had preset. The guy grabs the paper, he unfolds it, and he goes, well, I can kind of read it, but it's all crinkly looking. So John Foster takes another piece of paper, scribbles on it, and now he starts folding it very carefully in halves and quarters and eighths and scrunches it down, and then he throws it across to the guy again. Guy opens up this folded piece of paper and he says, now I can see it, but there's a lot less artifacts because it's got, or would it be fewer artifacts? Anyway, it just had a couple of lines on it instead of this big old crunkly thing. And he said, that's the difference between bad compression and good compression. I just love a great example like that where you could explain to anybody now exactly what compression means. Well, you know, here Ron and I always go to the show together, by the way, and you know, we're party animals, man. We go out and go nuts when we're at a show like this. You know, we're staying in a hotel right there. We can just go crazy. We stayed out until 9:30 on Friday night. Let me tell you, we're crazy. Well, I should tell you that the show ends at like 4:30, so everybody starts having fun almost immediately. And we aren't complete duds. We went to a party where the French maids of FrenchMaidTV.com were up on stage. Well, they wanted female volunteers to join them. And Ron kind of goaded me up onto the stage, right? So anyway, here's these are excruciatingly beautiful women dressed in these little French maid costumes. If you haven't seen the show, it's the weirdest thing. It's not for everybody, absolutely. But these French maids, these girls that have these stupid fake French accents, explain how to do things maybe in technology or other parts of life. Like, I saw one where they were explaining how a router works. Another one, they were explaining how to change a tire on a car or something like that. So it's kind of a funny premise, and they're wildly popular and all that. But anyway, so I'm up here with these exotically beautiful women, and they're adorable. They're nice. They're fun. We're laughing on stage, as you can see in the photos. But it turned out this was a contest to become a French maid for the night. I didn't know that. I just knew when they wanted somebody to come up and do something silly. So these other two girls get up there, and luckily, the first one, they start having each of us dance, right? I'm a 49-year-old mother of two. I'm a geek. I'm not a dancer, trust me. So anyway, this girl gets up there, and she is a dancer. She's got on a really cute outfit, and she gets up there, and she's dancing all over the stage. And we're supposed to vote, too, right? Well, they have her dance, and then the second girl kind of just, like, does a spin. And she's real cute, too, but she's not doing what this first girl did. And they got to me and I took the microphone and I just said, I vote for the first girl. Everybody loved it. They picked her. They took her off stage and put her in a French maid costume. So it's a good thing that, I didn't win. That's all I can say. Well, that was our big adventure. Then Saturday night, Steve came out to join us and the three of us, we stayed up until 10 on Saturday night. Because you know what we did? We rented the movie Ratatouille on pay-per-view. Hey, It's a great Pixar movie. You should see it. It's fantastic. It was a really, really good movie, and we had fun. So don't make fun of me. I danced with the French maids. I'm crazy. Wild. Oh, let's see. Oh, I mentioned earlier Don McAllister. He does a show called Screencasts Online. You got to check this out. He did a speech on how to do screencasts, and it was one of the best ones at the conference. Now, I should mention that he's a friend of mine, and I got to work with him on the Mac Roundtable a while ago. Great, great guy. Really like him. So I am biased in saying it was the best. But throughout the day, I heard people behind his back talking about, oh, man, did you see Don McAllister's thing on screencasts? That was amazing. So anyway, he does a great job, and I liked it enough that I bought a copy of the movie, and I'm going to send it on to Tim Verporten so he can see it too. It was really, really good. But we also had more fun. He and John Chambers and Ron and I went out to dinner and had a good time. John Chambers does the 1 Minute Tip podcast at oneminutetip.com. I also got to hang out with Andy McCaskey of the slashdotreview.com podcast. We've been online friends for a couple of years, and we meet up each year at the expo, and we ran into John Chambers there too, so there's a picture of the three of us together in the show notes too. It was a lot of fun seeing Andy. He's a really, really nice guy. Well, a few months ago, listener James tipped me off to a podcast called Mac OS Ken at macosken.com. Ken Ray does the podcast, and he does a lot of research and provides a nearly daily Mac news podcast that doesn't seem to rehash what everybody else is talking about. He hits the big topics, but he has a different slant on it. He also delivers his material in a completely deadpan, dry way. I mean, he's just real, real dry. And then suddenly he'll throw in some completely sarcastic, obnoxious comment that just cracks me up. He's really, really funny. I had the pleasure of meeting him. And just to make James jealous, I took a picture with him and put it in the show notes, too. Take that, James. Another big highlight was Tom Merritt of Buzz Out Loud, CNET. Buzz Out Loud, CNET's podcast of indeterminate length, was there. That's at bol.cnet.com. I love Buzz Out Loud. Molly Wood, formerly Veronica Belmont as well, work with Tom, and they're just great together. Tom, though, is my favorite. He's very technical. He's just really quick. He's quick-witted, and he's quick phrase. I mean, he just comes out with these things that you'd never see coming. Like one time, somehow, I can't even remember the context, but somebody mentioned ATP, which I'm not a biochem kind of person, but I think it's the stuff that is energy inside plants. And out of the blue, Tom says the full words for ATP. Like, nobody knows that except like biochem kind of people. He even made a string theory joke one time. I mean, come on. That's pretty technical, I thought. Anyway, he gave a good talk on how to build up your audience. It was pretty fun. I was talking to Tom afterwards, and a woman walks up to me, Dorothy Yamamoto. She walks up and says, "Hey, are you Allison Sheridan?" It was pretty cool. She recognized me from my voice, I think, or how loud and obnoxious I was, or something like that. She's a friend of Tim Verporten's, and she's also a listener to the podcast, so that was fun all around getting to meet her. Like I mentioned, Tom's speech was about how to build up your audience. A lot of the tracks were about that. I think there's a lot of interest in making sure you get your name out there and that sort of thing. And another guy named Dave Lawrence did a whole show on that, and he suggested one thing I hadn't thought of. He said I should ask you guys to help me with this. We have a strong and very loyal listenership here at the NoSillaCast, but I can't help but always wanting to wish that there was more people gaining the benefits of the work I do to put the show together. Here's the deal. Why don't each of you tell one person, or five, about the podcast? Just this week, make it your goal to tell somebody about it, give them the URL, forward them an MP3, or, you know, do something to generate somebody's interest in this. I bet we could swell the numbers a little bit if we did that. I'd really appreciate it if you could help me out. Another good idea for working up buzz that Tom Merritt suggested was to create a Facebook group. I'm on Facebook, but I didn't know how to make a group. So I jumped in there and I created the NoSillaCast podcast group. Not quite sure how this is all going to work out and what it's going to do, but I posted all the pictures from the expo up there so you can take a look at them there. If you're on Facebook, join the group right away and post stuff and tell me how I can make it valuable to you. Or just write things in there like comments that say, this is the best podcast ever. That'd be cool. If you're not on Facebook yet and you've been trying to figure out why you'd want to be on there, now you have the motivation. Come on in, the water's fine. Join us over there. One epiphany came to me during the show, and I must give Ron credit for it. One presenter discussed the value of having a flash player on your website for the latest episodes. And I made a remark to Ron about how I hate sites with all this flash on them because it cranks up my processors, it turns on my system fans, and it slows everything else down that I'm trying to do. Even if I'm not touching the website, like it's just in a background window, it's slowing my system down, and I can't stand that. One time I tried putting a flash Mebo widget. I tried putting a flash Mebo widget on my site, which would allow you to chat with me if I was online. And boy, did I hear from you guys quickly to say, get that thing off of there. It was wrecking everybody's experience. I also tried turning on a plugin on podfeet.com that turned every QuickTime player link into flash players. See, I wouldn't have to do any work. You just do it automatically. That was a disaster too. So at that point, as I'm complaining to Ron about the idea, he says, well, there's flash players you can put on that don't play flash unless you actually push them. Oh, wow. I didn't realize that could be done. I'm going to work on that in the next few weeks and see if I can get something going. But trust me, if it's going to make flash actually play and slow you down, I ain't doing it. At one point, I saw Alex Albrecht of Dignation, which is a podcast he does with Kevin Rose. They're two guys from dig.com. And unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to talk to him. Wish I could have, because I really wanted to tell him that I'm a 49-year-old woman who really likes his show, and I got a tip that it was a good show from my 54-year-old woman friend. You see, these guys cater just a bit more to like the 20 to 25-year-old crazy party animal guy. So I thought he might enjoy knowing that on occasion he hits a nerve with old cronies like me. At the other end of the spectrum, I also saw Father Roderick of the Catholic Insider podcast, which is hosted at sqpn.com. That's a great podcast. I haven't talked to him about him in a long time, but it's a terrific podcast that you might really enjoy. I didn't get to bother him, though. That was unfortunate. My friend Greg Lemon of the wonderful mythpodcast.com was there again this year, and we got to swap some stories and experiences and learn from each other. His show is about myths and fairy tales, and he's got a marvelous voice and just such enthusiasm for the stories of history and fairy tales and that sort of thing. He also had a really cool portable recording that he showed me. I put pictures of it in the show notes. It's called the H4 Handy Digital Recorder. It records to SD memory cards, and with a 2 GB card, you can get 380 minutes of 16-bit CD quality recording on it. This is a little handheld unit that's smaller than a paperback book, actually. It's not cheap at about $300, but for what it can do, that price is actually pretty low. It'll take 2 microphone inputs with XLR jacks, or it can be handheld with, it has a mic input at the top. So when you look at the picture in the show notes, you'll see that you just grip this thing in your hand, and it's got a microphone, one of those foam bubble things on the top, so you just talk right into it. Even does stereo at that. I was very jealous of Greg. I want one. You know, for all those interviews on the street that I do, I think I need one. Anyway, there's pictures of Greg and I and his H4 in the show notes. I think you'll have picked up from my enthusiasm about the show that the greatest value of this kind of thing is really the people you meet and what you learn in the offline conversations. I see the presentations themselves as a launching board just to have conversations with the people you meet afterwards. I like to talk to people who ask interesting questions, or the people who intrigue you at the lunch hour or drinks. Those are the guys that you actually remember. It was a great time. I learned a lot, and it charged me up to keep going for another year. Next year, it's going to be in Las Vegas from August 14th to 16th. Maybe I'll stay up until 11 next year. Well, I guess it's time to get down to a little bit of business in the show here. There's one tip here that I've been holding for quite a while. I keep running out of time and haven't been able to tell you about it, and it's actually a cool Windows tip. Listener Susan is an avid Windows fan, or get stuck with Windows. I'm not sure which way it is, but she's really good at it. She sent in a really interesting tip. Remember, this podcast is supposed to be only an ever so slight Macintosh bias, and we all know sarcasm is never necessary. So once in a while, I got to work in a Windows tip to keep my my plot line going. You may remember listener Susan. She's the developer behind AtPotter from apotter.org, the podcatcher designed specifically for visually impaired but not blind listeners. Anyway, here's her tip. She says, a small trend, especially for open source utilities, is portable apps at portableapps.com. The motivation is primarily to run on a memory stick and leave no traces on the hard disk. I've tried some of the portable app suite, and what's really neat is the standard directory structure, .exe, help, data, app, and other. I especially appreciated this portability when I set up the FTP for my website using FileZilla, then just copy the directory to a memory stick and use the same FTP data in my newer PC. Other applications that seem useful are a couple of accessibility aids, the PDF reader, even though it's not accessible, since Acrobat wants to update it every time it's used. Firefox and Thunderbird are in the suite as well. I'm not sure these apps update or upgrade, but the portability goal is so sane and useful when it works. By the way, I'm typing this on the level star icon with a wireless Bluetooth keyboard and POP3 to Gmail. It's nice to have the keyboard several feet from the computer to type while reclining and less expensive in case of spills on the keyboard. Who would spill on the keyboard? That's wild. Well, anyway, hey, thanks, Susan. This is really slick. So I think what the idea is she's explaining is basically you have a thumb drive that has application suite running on it, and you just stick it in a computer and you can run your applications. So let's say you run Firefox on it. When you bring this thumb drive to another computer, you'd be able to access all of your bookmarks and everything, and your themes would all be set up the way you like it. So you could go on somebody's computer, work on it, and it doesn't leave any trace, doesn't leave any cookies or any of that kind of stuff on the other PC. So that's pretty cool. I really wish I wish that they had that for the Mac, but apparently it's only on Windows right now. So go check that out at portableapps.com. Thanks for the tip, Susan. Well, I'm very excited about my new sponsor. I'm sure you could catch it last week. But I'm now advertising for the Wall Street Journal. This is going to be so easy. This is a slam dunk. If you've been listening to me for a long time, I'm sure you've heard me mention the Journal. I just love this newspaper. I love it because it's actually a really good source for technology news. For example, just this Tuesday, I was reading an article about how Facebook is being wooed by both Google and Microsoft to buy minority shares, and how Facebook should take a page from history. They should be looking at the investment strategies of GeoCities. Remember them? Well, they're not around anymore. So maybe that's why Facebook should pay attention. That article was even in the money and investing section, which I never read. The Journal explores the financial implications of world events, but the money and investing section is really, really about money and investing, a little deeper than I really want to go. So I actually prefer the marketplace section. Every day, there's nearly a whole page on technology. That's just the regular days. On Wednesdays, there's the personal journal, and it has a big section called gadgets. The best day of the week, though, is Thursday. That's when they have the technology journal. That means a column by Walter Mossberg and then Mossberg's mailbox, plus the regular dose of technology. I'm in heaven on Thursdays. Anyway, if you think you might want to get the Wall Street Journal delivered to you, or if you're new age, you know, new media kind of person and you prefer the online version, please go right over to podfeet.com and click on the Wall Street Journal badge on the right-hand side. You'll really like it, I promise. A few weeks back, I told you about a fun site called allmyfaves.com. This is a site that categorizes tons of cool sites and lets you go to those sites by simply clicking on the badge icon for their logo. I was really enamored by this tool, but when I showed it to Bart, his first instinct with this was that this is a bunch of ads, and that's how the site is paid. I thought maybe I'm naive because that didn't even occur to me, but I decided to check it out by writing to the developers and asking them. I was curious how they decide what sites are worthy for each category, and especially how they decide what goes on the new weekly faves tab, since there's a lot of sites in there I've never heard of. Roy from AllMyFaves.com wrote back to me, and here's what he had to say. Hey, Allison, regarding your question, it sure looks obvious that we will choose the sites by their popularity, but actually a lot of thought is put into every site. We have a very strict criteria for selecting the sites. Not the biggest, only the best. And the criteria he listed was usefulness, technology, friendliness, design, obtrusiveness, and then popularity. He goes on to explain that of course you will find the most popular sites there, because you can't ignore them. But almost in every list, there's at least one small site that is not quite mainstream. This applies to our weekly faves, which needs to stand to these criteria, and usually our new and upcoming sites. As to your friend's question, the sites are not affiliated with us. They're all handpicked and placed by how good they are. Currently, we are working on a customizable version of the site where you can pick your top faves and make your personal, frequently visited homepage, share them, and get recommendations about new sites. All this by keeping our main idea of a visual website. Make sure to check back for some more surprises. Hope this answers your question. Thanks again for the excellent review. Best regards, Roy Pessis. I love that he wrote back with such detail about the site, and he intrigues me with his teaser about more surprises. It's good to know that the links are not paid for ads, too. I've actually started using allmyfaves.com as my homepage for the last couple of weeks, and I've noticed two things. I actually used it to quickly navigate it to a site I needed. I needed to look up an airplane flight on American Airlines, and instead of trying to figure out what the URL was, I just clicked on the travel tab in All My Faves, and the first row is Airlines, and there was American Airlines logo right there. Very intuitive, because it just jumps out at you because it's, you know, it's an icon. It's the very recognizable American Airlines logo. Now, of course, most of you are going to point out that American Airlines is AA.com, and that would have been faster, but hey, I didn't remember that. The other thing I noticed, though, is that I've been clicking on logos I've never seen before just to see what they are. And I think that's one of the beauties of this site, is it's going to open your eyes to some sites that maybe you've never played with before. So just as an example, last week I was gazing at weekly faves, and I saw something called Should Do This at shouldodothis.com. What? What is that? I need to click it. Anyway, I think it's an interesting site. Basically, if you think of something that you think someone should do, you write it in there. You have a field for who should do it and another one for what they should do. Say you would put in for the who, you'd put in Apple, and what they should do is unlock the iPhone. I just made that up off the top of my head. Then I did a search, and 15 people had submitted the same thing within a very short period of time. It's kind of a fun site to state your opinion and also to find out what other people think should be done. Under another section in Weekly Faves, they had a link to this weird little test, and it's a long link, so I put the link in the show notes. It's a test to see if you're right or left brain. It's a woman in silhouette spinning on one foot, and whether you see her spinning clockwise or counterclockwise is supposed to tell you if you're an artistic intuition person or a logical person. Shockingly, I saw her turning clockwise, which means the logical side of my brain is doing all the work. Anyway, I would have never stumbled across these cool sites without all my faves. Check it out yourself. You lose valuable hours doing that. All right, this next tip, you're going to think I finally went off my rocker. You know, it was only a matter of time anyway. But I am actually lusting after a Microsoft product. Yes, it's true. James tipped me off to a sexy, drool-worthy Microsoft product. It's called Office 2008 for the Mac. I know you're scoffing right now, but when you go over to macoffice2008.com, you'll see what I mean. Now, it's altogether possible the software itself isn't actually sexy, but man, the website sure is. When they show how they have the fully integrated iPhoto fully integrated into PowerPoint, and how you can make a photo look kind of curled up like a picture from the 1950s and plop it into PowerPoint, it really is drool-worthy. I know, I shouldn't ruin all the good part for you and leave some discovery to you, so go check it out and tell me if you don't drool too. Well, I'm an essentially lazy person, and I value my own time. I think a lot of us feel guilty for feeling this way, but let's be honest, our time is something in short supply. That's one of the reasons I use Honda Bob to do all my auto maintenance and repairs. He's got a terrific business model. He has this full shop that he carries in his cherry red Honda Element, and he drives to your house, and he can do pretty much any car repair out of that vehicle than you can possibly imagine. But because he provides a mobile service, he's had to develop ingenious mechanisms to do things as complex as replacing a transmission in your driveway. You think I'm kidding, don't you? Well, I can prove it. I've seen it done. In my own driveway at that. Maybe you remember me talking about this before, but I'm just still amazed he did this. I gave Honda Bob the pictures I took of him replacing my daughter's transmission a few months back, and he posted on his wonderfully useful website over at hdabob.com. If you don't believe me, go look at the pictures. He really does. He's got these cool mechanisms he's built to do it. It's really neat. If you haven't heard me talk about Honda Bob before, I should mention that he specializes specifically in Hondas and Acuras, so if you don't own one, you should probably just stop listening to the show right now and go out and buy one. But make sure you come back here when you get back from the dealer and pick up where you left off, okay? We'll be waiting here. Don't worry. I should also point out that he services the Los Angeles and Orange County areas only, but it's okay to go buy a Honda or Acura even if you don't live around here. You just can't use Honda Bob, I'm afraid. If you'd like to have Honda Bob take care of your car, give him a call at 562-531-2321 or shoot him an email at hdabob.com. He's also looking for people to provide questions to him about how cars work. It doesn't have to be Honda-related necessarily, but about how cars work. He's been taking these questions and then submitting them, putting them up on his website with the answers to the questions. If you go over to hdabob.com, and you click on the link on the front, on the second page, it says, ask a question, and then you can jump in and ask your question right there. Go over and check out all the QA he's already got going in the link in the show notes. Okay, this isn't a computer one at all, but, well, I guess it's sort of a computer one. Sort of has to do with computer keyboards or something. But have you ever heard of an octothorpe? My best friend from high school, Linda, sent me an explanation of what an octothorpe is, and something about it was just really pleasing, so I'm going to share it with you. First of all, the octothorpe is the symbol frequently referred to as the pound sign on a telephone or the number up above the 3 on your keyboard. Here's why it's called an octothorpe. The origin of the word is, it says, the odd name for this ancient sign for numbering derives from thorpe, the Old Norse word for a village or farm that is often seen in British place names. The symbol was originally used in map making, representing a village surrounded by 8 fields, so it was named the octothorpe. I know, I'll give you a minute to go over and look at the octothorpe and count the number of fields that could be around this farm. Isn't that delightful? All right, so you're thinking I have a screw loose again, right? Well, I bet you find yourself thinking, it's an octothorpe, silly, the next time a recorder voice tells you to hit the pound key. Tell me if you don't do that. All right, my last tip for the week is, this sounds too good to be true. If you're a student, or you've got a student in your family, and you're a Windows user, how'd you like to buy Office 2007 for $60 US? I know, this is really hard to believe. I don't understand why this is true. But if you go to theultimatesteel.com, you'll see a $60 offer for students carrying at least a half of a course load. At first blush, I was really skeptical when my friend Bruce sent me this link, because you look at it and there doesn't look like a Microsoft site at all, so you figure you're probably buying something hot off the back of a truck in Zimbabwe or something. But he also supplied the link to the Microsoft site, explaining that it is indeed true. I just wish it was for Mac users, too, because, you know, I want Office 2008. But anyway, if you're a Windows user and you got a student in your family there, you should be checking this out, because $60 is a sweet offer. I'm exhausted after 3 days of learning and schmoozing and, of course, those late, late nights till 9:30 or 10. Don't forget your homework assignment. Tell at least one person about the NoSilicast. If it turns into an interesting story, send me an email and I'll try to read it on the air. You know I love to get comments, feedback, and reviews, so keep those great emails coming too. It's so great to hear from you. Send those emails to allison@podfeet.com. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.